States versus Thomas.
Good morning, Your Honors. To the jury in this case, this was an ordinary gun possession case. Of course, they didn't know that the defendant faced a 20-year sentence under the Armed Career Criminal Statute. But it was a domestic dispute and a gun found under a stairway and him being charged with possession, and then they find narcotics on him. Now, and he had a tattoo that had, which is a picture of it, it's in the briefs, of two handguns crossed.
Mr. Hike, forgive me. Did I read somewhere that he's had it for 10 years, or is that just...
The tattoo?
Do we know how long he
no,
had it?
No, there was no evidence
there
whatsoever
was
about where this tattoo came from or how long it was and so on. Now, but the question is, now what would a juror, what would an ordinary juror possibly make of the relevance of this tattoo to the issues that he or she must decide? Is the juror really going to say, aha, you know, this is just like they found a photograph of this gun or a receipt from the gun store in his apartment proving that it's the same gun. So that must have been his gun under the stairwell. And that's what the government's arguing on this appeal, and it's patently ridiculous. I thought that I had killed that theory in arguing before Judge Norville, and that argument is in the appendix to my brief. And the government backed away at that time. Judge Norgo says, are you going to bring in the tattooist? And they said, no, Judge, we're not going to try to do that. But now they're trying to say that this is somehow you can go into a tattoo. There's nothing in the record to show that the tattoo parlor lets you you bring in and say, I've got this make and model of gun, and I'd like that one tattooed on my arm. You know, or bring in the gun and have it copied. It's just patently, everybody knows, it's the elephant on the table, everybody knows the purpose of this evidence. Everybody knows. And you don't have to go any further than Judge Norgel's ruling on the motion in limine. It is relevant to whether he would have knowledge of weapons or absence of mistake or is aware of the existence of guns and thinks enough of them in one way or another to place an image on his body. The government in its brief, the tattoo shows that defendant has an affinity for such weapons and went to great lengths to display his affection for that type of firearm to the world. Who other than a person who advertises his knowledge and love for revolvers and likes to possess them would have such a tattoo? Now, I submit that the government's argument in its brief that it has some probative value and the judge weighs the probative value against its prejudicial effect is not relevant here when you're dealing with Rule 404. And sometimes people, and I don't know whether you can say having a tattoo is an other act, certainly not a crime or a wrong, but people sort of overlook Rule 44A, which is the overall rule, and which is not a balancing rule. It says evidence of a trait of character is not available for the purpose of proving action in conformity therewith. And no degree of lawyer's talk is going to do away with the fact of what the reasoning of a juror would be about this tattoo. He is the kind of person who might have had a gun. That's the only possible thing they could have made of that tattoo. The government has not cited any case directly on point. They cite in their brief the same case that Judge Norgel relied on, the Foster case, which was a case where there was a specific issue to which, in that case, it was a writing, could relate. The Foster case, he's in his suitcase at the train station, they find drugs, and he says, I didn't know there were any drugs in my suitcase. And so they introduce a writing where he says, I'm a great drug dealer. Okay, well, that's an issue of knowledge that was brought up by the defendant where that particular writing was relevant to a specific issue, but you don't have that in this case. All of the cases cited by the government, and I dealt with them in my reply brief, are distinguishable. There are cases where there was some specific issue. In one case, proving that the defendant was defendant and another person were members of the same gang was relevant to their joint possession of the contraband, and so the tattoo in turn showed that he was a member of the gang. There was specific evidence here. But here you have just simple propensity evidence, and I think that the line should be drawn here. And I'll say this about both this evidence and the evidence of his two prior arrests for possessing a gun, one of which was 10 years prior to the episode and one was 7 years prior to the episode. And I'll say this about the general dual prosecution aspects of this case also, that the court has to keep in mind what is the perception. If the government says it has a strong case, they say that they have mention of a gun on a 911 call, they have an excited utterance by the sister, he pointed a gun at me, and they say they have an admission by the defendant after he was arrested that it was his gun. So they say, well, we've got a strong case here. But why would the government, in a case like this, disregard the public perception of justice? What is the perception of the defendant's family and friends who are in the courtroom, or other people who are in the courtroom, or their neighbors that they tell about what happened? What is the perception of the defendant as he serves his 20 years in jail? This is what the perception is. The perception is that here's a person whose gun possession charge is thrown out in state court by the judge for lack of probable cause, and then a year and a half later, he's dragged into federal court. And perhaps that was the intent of Congress in passing this law. You have a person who pleads guilty to narcotics possession in state court, serves a year and a half in the state penitentiary, and on the day he's released, is brought into federal court, and then he's charged with the same drug possession. And you have evidence put in, such as this tattoo and his prior arrests. This kind of overreaching, to the member of the public looking at proceedings in a court, that's what they think about. They say this guy was railroaded by this kind of tactic. The prior arrests, this is now standard procedure in virtually every gun case and every narcotics case that's tried downstairs in the district court. If there's a prior arrest for or conviction for guns or drugs, those are put in. And oftentimes they cite the second part of the well-known 404B test that says, well, the prior act has to be similar to the act that he's charged with. And I say, so that falls within it, overlooking the fact that it's similar most of the time, and in cases like this, means that it's being put in as propensity evidence. The jury is given an instruction in this case, as in most of the cases, with these broad generalities. They're saying, well, this evidence is relevant to motive and opportunity, period. Then on appeal, and to Judge Norgel, the government makes a lawyer-like argument about the supposed relevance of this evidence to motive and opportunity. Now, motive, of course, is not an issue in this case, because the issue was he the person that put the gun under the stairs? And the jury would have no cause to ask themselves, why did he put the gun under the stairs? Because they're supposed to decide, was he the person that put the gun under the stairs? And even if the jury were asking themselves, well, you know, he didn't have the gun when the officers first stopped him outside the apartment building, so could he possibly have had the gun and thrown the gun away? Would he have had a motive to do that? Well, the government in its brief points out very clearly what his motive would have been. He knew that a 911 call had been made to the police, and so he figured that there were police outside. And so he would be motivated to throw his gun away. But that has nothing to do with his prior arrests. If they were looking for a motive, there would be the motive. A generalized motive to hide a gun under the stairs, anyone would have going out on the street with a handgun. That's not legal in Chicago. So that there's nothing that particularly points to any element that the jury needs to decide as a defendant. Opportunity is even more vacuous argument. I don't know if I've gone into my rebuttal time.
You've gone over your time right now.
Pardon me?
You've gone over your time. Thank you. All right, counsel.
May it please the court, Joe Alicia on behalf of the United States. The defendant argues that the district court abused its discretion by admitting this evidence of the defendant's tattoo that he had on his forearm. The court properly allowed that evidence as direct, relevant evidence of the defendant's knowing possession of this gun.
How is the tattoo relevant to showing that he possessed a gun on this occasion?
Because, Your Honor, it shows his self-professed admiration or love for these guns made it more likely that he, as opposed to anybody else on this occasion, possessed this specific .357 caliber revolver.
And if I had a mermaid on my shoulder, would that be some sort of proof that I kept a mermaid at home, or I was a mermaid, or I loved mermaids?
It would be the way we've argued it and presented it to the district court and to the jury is that this was a pictorial admission of his possession of this gun, and that was the key. The whole point of this trial was, the whole question for the jury was, did this defendant possess this gun? We know he was a convicted felon. We know the gun traveled in interstate commerce. So that was the only issue, and it is probative of the fact that he possessed the gun in this case, since we did not have any direct evidence, I guess, of his physical possession of this gun, other than his sister coming out yelling, "He just pointed a gun at me."
And isn't that really the real reason you wanted to get it admitted, because you didn't have any direct evidence of it? You don't know when the tattoo was, when he got the tattoo. There's nothing on the tattoo that's got the serial number of the gun. You can't tell it's the same type of gun in the tattoo. I mean, it just seems to me that's really, really reaching.
I believe, Your Honor, that you can tell by looking at the photograph of the tattoo and the photograph of the gun that he possessed here, that they were nearly identical. Yes, there was no serial number on there. And yes, parts of that tattoo were redacted before they were presented to the jury. But there was no unfair prejudice here. And we did have evidence that he possessed this gun.
Pure character evidence, and in my view, totally inadmissible.
Respectfully, Your Honor, we would argue that this was not that this was probative and it's not propensity. First of all, that tattoo in itself, there's no crime to have a tattoo. This is not like we presented witnesses and evidence that this individual, Mr. Thomas, committed bad acts in the past or did something, was twirling the gun around on another occasion. The fact of having a tattoo on one's arm is not a crime in and of itself. And I believe that the position of the tattoo further strengthens our point in that he placed it in a part of his body that was open to all the public to see. He's professing this pictorial admission, as I say, which created an indelible link between him and this gun in this case.
Yeah, but then part of the tattoo was redacted, because around the tattoo were the gang, right, the gang symbol, the alleged gang symbol.
I don't think it was a gang, Your Honor. I think it was some probably inflammatory language with blood dripping off of those letters.
Right.
I don't think there was ever any evidence that it was.
All right. But anyway, but certainly the gun was a part of that whole tattoo, and so if it's in the public part of his arm, if he's a gangbanger, if he wants to threaten somebody, you know, if that perhaps were our situation, then you could look at the tattoo in context, and then, you know, maybe he was doing that to show somebody he was a threatening kind of individual. But that wasn't even, I mean, the gun was the only thing that the jury saw, because obviously the rest of that wasn't relevant.
Correct, and that's, again, that's why we redacted it, to protect the defendant from any undue prejudice of this tattoo. The defendant also argues that the district court abused its discretion in admitting the evidence of the 404B cases that were presented in this case. Again, the main issue in this case is the defendant's knowing possession of this gun. And part of that issue included trying to answer to the jury their question of why was the gun not found on the defendant after that several block chase through the residential neighborhood. And therefore, it was critical for the government to prove in its case in chief that the defendant possessed that gun. And the two points that it was offered on were motive and opportunity. And the defendant limits his attack to the first part of the 404B test, the propensity character of this evidence. As to motive, the defendant is not situated like anybody else in the city of Chicago or anybody else for that matter. He had a heightened motive to hide that gun or dispose of that gun.
So does everyone who has ever been arrested before. If we would agree with you here, we would be swallowing up the rule about excluding other crimes, because every ex-convict has a motive to hide new crimes. In fact, every criminal has such a motive, whether he has been convicted previously or not.
I'd like to differ with you, Your Honor, because in this case, you have somebody that's been through the system several times. He knew that if he was caught with this gun again, he faced substantially more severe penalties in the state system than someone who had not been did not have the criminal history that he possessed in this case. Therefore, he had a heightened motive, unlike other citizens, unlike other people in that community.
Did you put into evidence what he knew or didn't know?
We tried to do that through the circumstantial evidence in this case. The second point was the opportunity. Now, yes, while it can be conceded that everyone has the opportunity to procure one of these guns to get a .357 revolver, only the defendant in this case, and that's why it was offered in this case, only certain people, and the defendant is in this small limited group, has the means to get this gun. Being a convicted felon, he knew he could not walk into a gun store and buy a gun. He showed the means to get this gun, and therefore that 404B evidence was relevant as to the opportunity in this case. And any prejudice which flowed from introducing the 404B evidence was limited not only by the district court in this case instructing the jury at the time that the evidence was submitted, that the evidence was being submitted for limited purposes, and again at the conclusion of all the evidence and arguments in this case, when the judge again admonished the jury that 404B evidence was only supposed to was to be considered for a limited purpose.
Getting back to the issue of his knowledge, I mean, and I just can't recall, the two prior gun charges, they were not federal charges, were they?
They were not. They were both state charges.
So is your suggestion that he would be facing a lot of extra time? You tried to show circumstantially he knew he might be indicted as an armed career criminal here on the federal side?
No, Judge. Just in the state system, he would have been facing more severe penalties than someone who had never been convicted even in state court of a state conviction. And also the most prophylactic thing, part of introducing this evidence and protecting the prejudice in this case, is the fact that the jury was going to find out he was a convicted felon anyway. It was part of the charge in this case. Therefore, when this evidence was introduced, it lessened and it abated any type of prejudice which flowed from introducing the evidence of the two prior convictions.
You know, I read the transcript of the closing, and his defense was only that the government failed to meet its burden. What in his defense would have justified allowing in the tattoo and the prior gun convictions? It's not as if he claimed an unfamiliarity, with guns, for instance.
Your Honor, just because the defendant only argued that the government did not prove him guilty in this case, it is always our burden to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant committed a crime, that this defendant committed this crime, and the evidence was introduced as relevant, direct evidence, and we believe through the use of this evidence we were...
The tattoo is direct evidence.
It is, Judge, of his knowing possession of that specific .357 caliber revolver.
Well, we're going to have to just clean the streets off of people with tattoos.
We ask that this court affirm.
Thank you, counsel. All right, your time is up. We will now proceed to case number 4, please.